welcome to the Cloud Innovation Podcast. We're super excited to have you here wherever you are watching and listening from. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about cloud cost optimization, or the more sexy word, FinOps. So what are we talking about? Are you doing too much manual work in there that could be done in an automated way? Are you making maximum savings that you could be by reducing how much you're running in your Kubernetes cluster? Is that running too fat? The best ways to optimize your savings from AWS, because we know secretly that although they tell you they want you to save money, that really they're the bad guy and they're definitely trying to get you to spend the most. And looking at all the different ways that you have possibly missed savings along the way inside your cloud environment. First of all, I'll do an introduction as to who I am. Great to meet you. I'm Nesh. I'm based out of the UK and I've been working for Global Dots for 5.5 years. And in that time, I've been specializing particularly in FinOps, as well as cloud security and web security, but definitely with a lot of FinOps, and working for Global Dots. And who are Global Dots? We've been around for 20 years. We're essentially a company that takes innovative technology from around the world. We find very cool new vendors that nobody's heard of before. We help bring them to market and then help companies, in this case, save lots of money. Joining me in this episode is my colleague and co-host, Francesco, if you'd like to say hello.
Hello, everyone. This is Francesco Altomare. I've been with Global Dots for about 10 years. I firstly joined as an engineer. These days, I'm also a sales driving operations in the south of Europe.
Great. Just to mention, if you are watching this on Bright Talk, please be sure to leave any questions you want answered and we'll get back to them at the end of the stream. Now let's get into it. Essentially, we're talking about FinOps, and it would be foolish of us not to look at what the emerging trends are and what the previous trends are. We know because we're integrating these solutions into people on a daily basis. But Francesco, do you want to maybe give us an introduction as to what you're seeing as some of the latest trends in the market?
Very happily. To begin with, I will back up what I'm about to say by data coming from the FinOps Foundation. You probably already all know it. If not, just Google it, FinOps Foundation. They produce a yearly report. We're 3 years into their reports. And to be honest with you, what I'd like to share are the five main trends happening in 2023. So the first one has everything to do with the forecasting trends. We've seen how over the years, forecasting has moved from a yearly perspective to more monthly perspectives. This tells us that FinOps professionals out there are trying to break down the forecasting period in smaller chunks. This completely resonates with our operations. The second main takeaway from 2023's reports is, from a consultant's perspective, apparently, the bigger the organizations, the likelier it is that they won't have enough in-house resources and that they will end up hiring external consultants or specialists. The third main takeaway for 2023 is that, well, something never changed. The top challenge for companies out there stays empowering engineers to take actions. You probably know what I'm talking about. It's the same old gap between people having to run numbers and people who are to run operations. However, in 2023, we see that the top growing challenge be enabling automation. This also resonates with us a lot. Automation. Finally, as you may know, respondents are generally caged into either the crawl, walk, or run stage of FinOps. And well, good 67% of them all, 3 years into this study, still belong to the crawl stage. Food for thought, I'd say.
Yeah, and I would say, basically, on a day-to-day basis, we are having these conversations with people. I'm on Zoom calls and we're introducing people to these technologies. And the huge barrier that I find is, first of all, convincing people that the automation is going to do a better job than the humans do. And the second part is anything that is more complicated than a simple financing part. So by that, I mean automating your reserved instances, automating your your savings plans. And you can get RIs all over the place now in AWS. You can get them for EC2, you can get them for RDS, Elasticsearch, OpenSearch, Lambda, DynamoDB. There's all these places that people don't know they could be getting savings. And certainly if you're a larger organization, you lose track of where all these savings are. But those are the basic, those are the easy wins and the super low hanging fruits. And people are still not really aware of this. I would say after many years of introducing this to people, vast majority of companies aren't even aware that that's out there. But actually, these aren't even the best savings. So reserved instances actually somewhere in the middle of the pie. The ultimate best savings are further along using spot instances and using platform automation and things like that. And actually, I think, and maybe you can argue to the point, that the on-ramp for that causes too much friction that people don't go and make the best savings they could. So actually, if you move your platform, for example, your whole Kubernetes platform to be run by spot instances, orchestrated with spot instances, you would save the most money on your Kubernetes platform. Yet most people aren't doing this because of the small engineering overhead.
This actually relates to the number I shared, because think about it. The reason why companies don't get and automate Kubernetes is then the same reason why they complain about lack of automation and how can engineers be empowered and do this themselves. It's a traditional gap in the FinOps industry. We know this, and well, we can hopefully help when it comes to running these operations and automating them. Everyone wins in such an equation. Why don't we move on and talk about different pieces of technologies running into a cloud and how each and every one of these is a different sport, if you like. Nesh, what's your perspective on it?
It's very interesting. So the first part we're kind of talking about RI automation, some other things, which, you know, this is kind of like the basics. We see at the moment very cool new technologies coming out around optimizing Kubernetes at the cluster level. So this is actually real time changing how much CPU and RAM a particular pod is requesting from the cluster. So scaling that up and down, which this is, I would say, brand new technology. I am seeing only one vendor doing this in the marketplace at the moment. So this is very cool because we're now talking about optimizing a layer before you get to anything that's hosted on the infrastructure. So I think that's very cool. That's very bleeding edge technology that we're looking at. And we have other things in there as well. There is aspects of your cloud bill which hadn't been considered before, which people are now looking to optimize. And that could be another example of that would be zipping up your S3 storage. So a new algorithm, think of it as a 7-zip or gzip for S3, for example, where you can zip up everything that's in S3 and then still have it completely readable. So we're seeing breakouts in those technology areas. Anything you'd like to expand on in that?
Well, from my perspective, there's a lot of products. If we stick to the AWS terminology, you might end up saving money even on PaaS or even SaaS products like RDS, ElastiCache, OpenSearch, DynamoDB. What about serverless? These are all different sports and neither of you likely runs them all. Maybe some do, right? The largest organizations out there. However, each and every one of these products, and I'm sticking to AWS terminology for conversation's sake, can be optimized in a different way. It's just a different approach to this. Also, maybe I can spend a couple of words on with regards to Kubernetes. You mentioned that, Ganesh. Maybe I can try and explain it to the less technical audience out there. You see, you can look at a Kubernetes cluster like a paella. I'll use a savory metaphor here. And then you have invitees, guests, basically. Right, your paella contains prawns and mussels, right? So by running it yourself and sticking to the receipts, you've got, you would think you need 15 prawns, right? Now, technologies like the ones Ganesh mentioned do two things mostly. First off, one kind of these technologies might run some predictive computation based on the hunger levels of your invitees and find out that you, after all, don't need 15 prawns, but rather just 9, given the number of the invitees, the time of the day, their relative hunger level, right? The other kinds of technologies instead pretty much run your errands. Whereas you would pay $1 each per prawn if you bought it yourself, on top of spending time to do this, right? Technologies like these not only run errands for you, but they can get them as cheap as $50 cents each for you without loss of quality. The end result is you save a lot of money, your invitees are still happy and fed at the end of the day, and well, your bill is much, much smaller. So everyone wins.
You never knew that talking about FinOps would be exactly like making a paella, but there you go. You never know what to expect on the podcast. And it's basically, you know, that's a great analogy because that's what you're doing. You know, you're looking to reduce your waste and looking to do it in an automated way across the board. I think that seems to be the message that echoes through all of these technologies, whether it was moving, you know, looking at purchasing RIs, moving something to spot instances or optimizing your Kubernetes cluster or doing something like that. Eventually, it's that the human is the problem in there and that there is a software or there is a tool that's coming to solve all of the problems where humans are spending too much waste or where somebody's configuring it is causing a problem. It reminds me, I had exactly on this subject a very large customer in AWS. It was the largest e-commerce customer in Thailand, actually the largest AWS customer in Thailand, period. And a very small mistake in their configuration meant that as a Kubernetes cluster was scaling up and then scaling down, it wasn't then deleting the EBS volumes in the background. And with the number of volumes that got left behind just from a simple configuration to say and delete on cleanup kind of thing, within 7 days, you're talking about $1,000 a day was being spent on just zombie EBS infrastructure. And this is a topic that I've talked about at length and wrote articles about previously, but you know, zombie infrastructure is almost even lower hanging fruit than RI automation, just cleaning up inside your AWS account, basic housekeeping. And that's the waste in there is absolutely incredible. And again, tooling is coming to fix the problem. And you know, these are some ones that are also quite interesting because we're looking now into the future and seeing a lot of open source coming through the line. So there's a company who we work with called Risotto, who are open sourcing all of this information for basic housekeeping, which kind of makes sense because you know, you need a common language to just look at your cloud estate and say, you know, how many EBS volumes have been unattached for 3 months, and then just provide you the list and then go, you know what, let's just get rid of that, rather than having somebody who has to write a script from scratch every time. And I think, again, that's kind of, even if it's open source tooling, use tooling, basically. If you're fighting this problem on your own, just be sure that someone else is fighting this battle somewhere else.
Housekeeping, such a vast topic. You mentioned that with regards to disks, the same applies to machines lingering around, possibly not using 1% of CPUs or MEM. the grower, the larger you as an organization grow, the harder it gets to keep track of all this. You might have had a developer, he or she developed something, he put up three machines, then his or her project was not promoted, he or she might have left the company, he or she may not have documented this anywhere. And now, how good are you at finding out in real time which and how many machines are running around in your infrastructure, costing you money, without spending CPU, memory, without doing anything meaningful, basically, and getting rid of those in a couple of clicks? There's technology there doing this.
It's definitely going that way. And you know, we see it in a daily basis, what used to be platform recommendations. So it used to be that you would plug in a XYZ tool and it would say, we think that you are oversized on servers A, B, and C, and then a suggestion, maybe you should make servers A, B, and C disappear or make them smaller. And actually now it's moving to the next level with integrations into Lambda or other serverless features and codified, where it's just hit the button and make the savings, you know. It's the automate this savings button. That's what we're heading towards, and that's everywhere.
Yes, I'd like to take a step back and talk about the crawl, walk, and run stages. I mentioned that in the opening. Something that's really, really delicate for me in my daily operations is making sure the companies we talk to don't feel offended when we go in there and offer them to save further costs. Let's make it clear. There's an ABC of running FinOps, as well as there's an XYZ, right? The first and foremost step is educating your colleagues and running all that humans can sufficiently well run with regards to right-sizing, avoiding waste, sticking to AWS best practices, to just to name AWS, etc. There's a degree, however, beyond which humans simply can't save more money because, again, we as humans are limited. And that's what pretty much in the FinOps Foundation eyes divides the crawl stage from the walk and then the run. The walk and the run stages are the stages where, on top of your educated FinOps professionals, you have automation and technologies doing the hard work for you, letting you sleep tight at night and saving you money without even you knowing. Or rather, yes, you knowing, of course, because you just wake up and see the bill shrinking, right? But that's a good feeling, isn't it? So, yeah, think about that.
That's a nice one to help you sleep tight. And what we see in the market, in the sales cycle, frequently people are always saying to us, we've done everything we can to save money. We know we've bought all the RIs and the savings plans, and we've done all the housekeeping we can do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's no more money to be saved. And we say, that's fine. Let's plug in one of these platforms and let's see what comes back. And 99% of the time, it comes back that there is savings they didn't find, and usually quite high savings. You know, I plugged someone in the other day who was adamant they wouldn't find something. We found $120,000 of savings every year that they weren't making prior to plugging in one of these tools. And what makes me laugh is that my vast majority of these things, the POC takes around 10 minutes to plug in a tool just to look at data. And on top of that, the ROI is a no-brainer, because nearly all the tools run on a no-win, no-fee basis. So if you don't make the savings you promise, then you don't have to pay any money for them. And if you do make the savings you promise, then you pay a small percentage of that. So I think it's that level of FinOps is becoming such a no-brainer across the industry that it's going to, adoption is going to hit 100% for those kinds of tools that are doing that. And I think probably adoption for all of those things is only going to be on the rise due to the oncoming recession. I mean, just last week, we have a collapsed bank in the United States. I don't know what it's like over there in Italy, but in the UK, where the economic outlook looks pretty grim. So these sorts of things will be only in more demand. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, Francesco.
it's frightening. Yes, I'm following up on the news. And yes, there's simply no good reason to not give a chance to tools like these to automate and save you further money. Once again, it is all about maturing from the crawl stage to the walk and then the run stage. You, as a human, save money. Savings are bigger than without these technologies. And engineers are finally empowered to be running these operations. Because at the end of the day, it's all a matter of an engineer running these technologies, automating these, and yeah, pretty much relaxing and watching the savings go up. That's it.
Great. Well, I think that probably brings this episode to a wrap. Been super cool talking to you, Francesco. Thanks for jumping on and having a tit for tat with me on the fun subject of FinOps and cost optimization. If you like the content and you'd like us to produce some more, please reach out to us, subscribe, like, and generally show us a bit of your support, and we can easily create more of this.